from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In 1967, at the age of 36, director Mike Nichols was already deep into drama and seduction. Here's the famous exchange from Mike Nichols, The Graduate.
Mrs. Robinson, here we are. You got me into your house. You give me a drink. You put on music. Now you start opening up your personal life to me and tell me your husband won't be home for hours.
So?
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
Mike Nichols rolled right on to one of the biggest careers there's ever been in American directing. An incredible span of work, from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf to Gay Love in The Birdcage to the CIA and Afghan Mujahideen in Charlie Wilson's War. Last year, he revived Death of a Salesman triumphantly on Broadway. Right now, he's in production rehearsal for Harold Pinter's Betrayal, starring Rachel Weisz and Daniel Craig. This hour on Point, legendary film and theater director Mike Nichols is with us. You can join us on air or online where this conversation never ends. What's your question, your word for Mike Nichols? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Mike Nichols directed Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, The Graduate, Carnal Knowledge, Silkwood, Heartburn, Working Girl, The Birdcage, Primary Colors, Closer, Charlie Wilson's War, and more for film. For stage, Barefoot in the Park, The Odd Couple, Monty Python, Spamalot, Death of a Salesman, and much, much more. He's taken all the prizes, Oscar, Emmy, Tony, Grammy. His new production of Harold Pinter's Betrayal opens October 1st on Broadway. Mike Nichols, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you. You open October 1st, so where does that mean you are in the process of directing this play?
Well, don't say we open October 1st. That's too scary. We open October 27th.
Oh, sorry.
We start previews October 1st.
Ah, okay. There's a distinction, but still, you want to be ready.
So we sort of have to be ready to say all the words, yes.
We don't want to scare you. Where does that put you in the process of interacting with them, of polishing and honing and carving this thing out?
Damned if I know.
I doubt that somehow.
No, you never know where you are at this point. But we're in what they call techs, which is the theater's way of saying nightmare. when the set doesn't arrive and you know, you don't know what you're doing yet physically. But it's going good. Nobody's fallen off the stage, right. And nothing has fallen from the flies on anyone so far, touch wood. And we're having a good time.
I mean, here we are. It's the end of September. That means you've done full run-throughs at this point for, I don't know, days, weeks?
I think for 2 days. We started 2 or 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. And most of the sets have arrived, and they've been put up. And then they change in between. There are like 9 different scenes, mm-hmm. 7 different locations. So there's a lot to do. And it's always an important choice when you do this play, because you could have a pie, and you could do it one or two ways. You either have half the pie at a time with a revolve, and then that means you have a big dead wall where the other half of the pie is being reset with the next scene.
Turning the stage, yeah.
But you could also have pie-shaped sets. I mean, piece of pie-shaped sets. Mm-hmm. That's the alternative, where mm-hmm. you go from piece of pie to piece of pie all around the pie with the revolve. And we somehow didn't want to do either one of those, so we're trying something else. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to tame for a few days. But last night we actually got through it, and it looked nice.
Deep in rehearsal. You're the grand master here. How does this start out? How do you sit down with your cast, including Rachel Weisz and Daniel Craig and more, and convey to them what it is you're hoping to see and hear from this production, this time?
Well, I think you do different things for different plays, different people. You're really looking to see what happens. The wonderful thing about a play is that there's no prose, there's no description, there's no... Her breast is heaving, and there's mm-hmm. a tear in her left eye. There's nothing that tells you what's happening. And that's a wonderful thing about plays, that you can—I mean, if there is something happening in a play, of course, and you see the top of it. You see what's expressed in words. And the rest is to look for. And that's why doing a play is an adventure, because, of course, you find what's happening and you find what people want and you find what the thing is about. But you find it in you and in the actors, as well as in the playwright.
How's that work break down? I mean, as director, what's your role in that looking for? How much is your vision? How much is a team project here ultimately?
Well, there are different definitions. Kazan said directing is turning psychology into behavior. Harold Clurman said the director creates the events of the play. And once you have all by yourself to begin with figured out what you think the story is and the theme is and what it's about and what happens in the story, you find ways to draw the story out of the actors or find out what they think. It's almost indescribable because you are as different as the different actors who you cast in different times. And this is we have three characters and a fourth brief character, a waiter. And in such a play, a Pinter play in which there's no, as it were, commentary, he doesn't give you any hints. Mm-hmm. Your story is defined by whom you've cast. Mm-hmm. And we got very lucky with this, with three, I think, actual great actors.
Rachel Weisz, Daniel Craig, and Rafe Spall. Rafe Spall's the husband, Rachel the wife, and Daniel her lover.
No, actually, she's certainly the wife. But Daniel Craig is the husband, and Rafe Spall is the wife, and Rachel Weisz is the woman.
Ah, okay. You know, one of the things that's amazing about you is your span of years in directing, the span of people you've directed. So think with us about, I mean, you did Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton in Who's Afraid of Richard.
I know.
And now you here are with Rachel Weisz and Daniel Craig and Rafe Spall. A little compare and contrast of the interaction.
Well, how do you compare people? You know, I mean, everyone is different. But one of the things that happens when you direct actors is that you get close. And then it's hard because you're talking about friends that you care about. And then they're friends that you love and you don't talk about your friends. And it gets harder and harder as you go to be objective about people that you care about, and which is also, by the way, ideal for working on a play because you're not looking at anyone from outside. You're looking at it from their point of view.
But when you quoted the work is turning psychology into behavior, you're talking about the actor's psychology, are you not, the individual actors?
Well, the character's psychology.
Okay.
The character's psychology creates events, and the events are what we see, and they're not necessarily in the words. So that what the events are, what happens between two and three people, is of course determined to begin with by the playwright. But you have various choices as you go along. In what way does it happen? What is really happening? What are we seeing? What are we not seeing? And those hundreds of thousands of millions of choices are what create the story anew every time. And you can make decisions about what their occupation is. I mean, what are they doing? Are they working on a loom? Mm. Is one of them making dinner? Are they undressing? Are they dressing? Are they playing with parts of each other? You have a very wide range of choices, and what you try to do is to discover what you think the characters are doing at any given moment, what their aims are, what their hopes, dreams, and fears are, and what you hope is that you will create behavior that is recognizable to the people in the audience from their own lives, and that they will identify. And with luck, you find it.
I want to talk about that interaction, about betrayal, about an amazing career in directing. When we come back, Mike Nichols, it's so wonderful to have you with us. Please stand by there in New York. Mike Nichols' production of Harold Pinter's Betrayal opens next month on Broadway. Behind us from The Graduate, The Sound of Silence, Simon and Garfunkel. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
And the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, tenement halls, whispering. Silence.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the great stage and screen director Mike Nichols about the directing life and his new play in production now, Harold Pinter's Betrayal, starring Daniel Craig and Rachel Weisz, Rafe Spall. Mike Nichols joins us from New York. I want to listen back to a couple of things here. One is you, Mike, way back in the day. This is off your 1960 album, An Evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May, your partner in comedy for so many years. This was your sketch, speaking of betrayal, this is your sketch, Adultery, two Americans having an affair, discussing how guilty they feel, the 1960 Mike Nichols and Elaine May treatment.
Just think how I feel, will you? Will you think how I feel?
I know.
George is my best friend.
Your best friend.
He's my best friend.
He's my husband.
Oh.
One of the sweetest, gentlest people.
Oh. He's a saint.
Oh, what a good person he is.
No, he's a saint. He's a saint.
Right.
He's a saint.
Right.
The man is a saint.
You're right, he's a saint.
He happens to be the only saint I know.
He is.
He's a kind.
Isn't he?
A loving.
Oh, you don't know.
Trusting.
Trusting, you don't know.
I know.
You don't know,
I know
how he trusts me. He trusts me. I couldn't do it if he didn't trust me.
I know.
Nichols and May playing Adultery, Betrayal for laughs. And here's a little bit, not from Mike Nichols, but from the 1983 film adaptation of Pinter's Betrayal. Jeremy Irons plays Jerry. Patricia Hoge plays Emma. In this scene, first scene, takes place 2 years after Jerry and Emma have ended a long affair. And Emma tells Jerry she's just confessed the affair to her husband, Robert, who's also, once again here, Jerry's old friend.
You told him everything?
I had to.
You told him everything about us.
I had to.
But he's my oldest friend. I mean, I picked his own daughter up in my own arms and threw up and caught her in my own kitchen. He watched me do it.
It doesn't matter. It's all gone.
From the 1983 film adaptation, not Mike Nichols, of Harold Pinter's Betrayal. Mike Nichols, how about it? 1960 playing Betrayal, Adultery for... Wonderful laughs there. And here, the kind of angsty thing, what a span just around this issue.
Oh, this is funny, too. Angst is funny.
Yes.
And, oh, by the way, they don't feel any angst. They're perfectly cool. They're very good liars. And they don't feel any guilt, which is very unusual. I think it's one of the things it's about. It's partly about a woman who does what she wants to do and feels nothing, no guilt. She loves two guys.
I mean, we hear there Patricia Hoge. There's certainly some distress in her voice, and certainly in Jeremy Irons, the way they're playing it. Will you play
it? Yes, they're upset.
Yeah,
they're upset, but it's not necessarily guilt.
Is that a difference in time, attitude? I guess there's nothing under the sun that you can't take any kind of perspective on you like.
I think it's a difference between people. I think here's a woman who is open, friendly, warm. Mm-hmm. She doesn't feel guilt. It's very unusual, but it happens. It happened to Harold Pinter, obviously. That's why he wrote about it.
Yeah, remind us of that story. This was written after a tumultuous time in his own love life.
You know, I know very little about that. He and I were friends, and we often started on projects and actually finished one. But we obviously didn't talk about each other's personal lives. And so I never knew about any of this any more than anybody else did. And I knew some of the same people, and various things happened to them, but I knew nothing about his private life. We didn't talk about it. We talked mostly about work, and the hard thing was politics, because we had Harold's politics were very hard on America,
mm-hmm.
and he tended to vent that some of the time. But apart from that, he was the best, the nicest, the most thoughtful. He was a great guy.
What about your politics?
I can't tell you about those events that partly, they say, led to this play.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that I've known some people who don't feel guilt. And they're like everybody else. They just don't feel guilt.
I mean, the British papers at the time, pretty full of it. Of course, they really go after that stuff. But your films, Rocky Relationships, Betrayal, or Rocky Relationships anyway, Again and Again, and Carnal Knowledge, and Closer, and Primary Colors, and Heartburn, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, on and on. I guess this is sort of the heart of human relations.
Well, the thing is, you know, if things go very well for some people, and they have nice lives, and they get along pretty well, and they love each other, and there's no problems, and they bring up their children well, and the children bring up their children, but that's not very much of a story. So that when trouble starts, it tends to lead to stories. And that's why you find yourself doing rage, you know, adultery, fear, and so forth, because that's what stories are made of.
And what about where your own interests and tastes are running at this point in your enormous career? I mean, Death of a Salesman, such a big triumph last year, and now Betrayal and Pinter. This is not Spamalot. This is more astringent kind of territory.
Well, I sort of circle plays for a long time. I was, in fact, supposed to do that movie of Betrayal, and went to London and worked with Harold, and I even, you know, worked on the script with him some, and it was produced by my sort of unofficial uncle, Sam Spiegel,
mm-hmm.
a man of whom I was very fond, but who was very colorful and he didn't give you a break. He was there all the time, and I found that he and I had very different rhythms. He was very slow and thought very carefully. And I found I couldn't think in his presence when Harold and I were working, and eventually I slipped away and said that I wouldn't be able to direct it. And I've thought about this play for a long time, not consistently, obviously,
mm-hmm.
but it would come and go. And finally thought I sort of knew some things about it, and I was going to try them out.
Is it going to be on the stage, Pinteresque, that kind of halting, equivocal, confusing? Is there any way it wouldn't be? I mean, it's his dialogue, after all.
Well, it is his dialogue, but, you know, different actors take different approaches. And that's, you know, that's the thing about control. I mean, plays are written by very controlling people, mm-hmm. obviously, because they see and hear it in a certain way.
Yeah.
But then as time goes by, other people get a chance to find themselves in the things that they've experienced in the play, and then it's up for grabs. There are pauses in the play, and you observe the pauses if it works with the events that you're finding. But if you think about Shakespeare and all the different stories that great actors and directors have found, I mean, there was a Hamlet last year. There were absolutely new events in the play suggested by the words. It was a wonderful Hamlet at the National Theatre in London. And it's always possible. You come and you find your version of the play. Nobody says it's ultimate because there'll be another and another. But that's part of the fun is to find the story that the group of you, the players and the director, think that this play is about.
Do you know when you've come upon a new angle, a fresh angle, your approach, do your eyes connect with one another and say, hey, here it is. We've found our voice on this work.
Well, you don't think of it as new. You think of it as having found what's happening in the play. I mean, an example from the Hamlet, which I went over to see and which was brilliant, is that, for instance, I've always thought that the speech to the players is extremely rude. They've just landed and he's already telling them how to act. Mm. And there was they did something else in this production. They landed, and he was very polite, and he greeted them, and then it sort of sped up like Keystone Cops. And suddenly you were in a rehearsal, and he was yelling at them, speak the speech, I pray you, as I pronounced it to you, trippingly on the time. If you saw the air, you know, he's suddenly having a tantrum about how they're playing his words. And it was completely believable. And it wasn't rude because they were working on the play. And it was a new idea. And it was a living and exciting idea because at last he wasn't being rude. He was at work. He cared about what he had written. And that's always available in a classic play, which, by the way, I think Betrayal is. And you take your chances and you find what you find. And you tell the story. You always have to tell the story, which is usually clear when you know a play. But within that story, it's up to you how you get places.
Mike Nichols has found the work so many ways over so many years. 1966, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Here, Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton.
You see, George didn't have much push. He wasn't particularly aggressive. In fact, he was sort of a flop. A great, big, fat flop.
Stop it, Mother.
I hope that was an empty bottle, George. You can't afford to waste good liquor. Not on your salary. Not on an associate professor's salary.
Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, 2004, Closer, Natalie Portman, Clive Owen, Larry and Alice, their significant others, cheated on them with each other. Here they are.
Alice, tell me something true.
Lying's the most fun a girl can have without taking her clothes off. But it's better if you do.
It's a big, big range. Mike Nichols, so many callers for you. Mary Jane in Lake Linden, Michigan. Thanks for calling, Mary Jane. You're on with Mike.
Hi. I was just being excited about the fact that there's a serious play, it sounds like, on Broadway again. Do you think Broadway is starting to bring back good, serious plays, or am I out the loop?
I think that there are all sorts of serious plays, and Macbeth is about to open on Broadway. Glass Menagerie is running on Broadway. Mm-hmm. There's always the thing about Broadway is there's so many different things at the same time that you know you get this year's musicals, but you also get classics. Always, also classics. And it's up to you. You know, you can see pretty much a wide range.
What about for you now? At this point, Mike Nichols, if you want to put on the Death of a Salesman or Betrayal, you just snap your fingers. The producer's ready to go. Mike, you want to do it? You're on?
Well, it's more a question of who you want to be in it, who you can get to be in it. What producer, you know, I have a producer that I've worked with numerous times that with whom I agree and who agrees with me a lot of the time. And when we don't agree, it leads to something very useful. And he's a very creative guy himself, Scott Rudin. Mm-hmm. And we have a good time figuring out who might be in the play, and is it a time when the play might have some meaning? It's a strange process. It's very hard to describe because it's a little bit like falling in love. Mm-hmm. You have to fall in love with the play to be able to try to do it.
So do you remember the elements of those conversations when you're looking at Pinter's Betrayal now, the people who might work for it, but also that sort of zeitgeist question, would it have meaning now?
It is, but the trouble with all that zeitgeist stuff is that it leads to generalities.
Yeah.
It leads to conclusions which are basically sociology and not theater. That what you're examining is what happens to these people and why does what happens happen? And it has to do with their approach to each other and what they do to each other and what they bring to each other. And
but the producer wants to know in part if it'll do box office, right? I mean,
well, who can you cast that would draw people? That's always, and more, mm-hmm. is obviously the job. And if you think that Daniel Craig, who is an extremely experienced actor, he's acted from a very, very young age, and he was on the stage for most of his life, and he's extraordinarily versatile. I mean, you can see him play young men, old men, mm-hmm. you know, all
Bond.
Sorts of men. James Bond himself, and that you have a very good chance both of drawing people and of expressing the character. Then if you like the play and he's interested and Rachel Weisz is interested and you can find a brilliant young, new to America actor, Rafe Spall, then you've got a shot.
Rafe Spall, many people will learn from your production. Rachel and Daniel, were they immediate yeses? Did they have to read and think and decide? And is it obvious answer when you call them?
Oh, it was a long process. Daniel and I have now known each other for a few years, not well, but we've liked each other and we've had talks and we've talked about this and that already. When I thought that he would be wonderful in Betrayal and that Betrayal would be interesting thing for him to do, I asked him and he said, yes, it was interesting.
Incredible range of work from Mike Nichols after all these years. Please stand by there, New York. The new production of Harold Pinter's Betrayal starts next month on Broadway. In rehearsal now, Rachel Weisz, Daniel Craig, Rafe Spall. Of course, Mike Nichols' career over so many decades, so many tones, always look on the bright side, Spamalot behind us, right here, a musical comedy based on Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour with the great stage and screen director Mike Nichols about the directing life and his new play in production now, Harold Pinter's Betrayal, starring Daniel Craig and Rachel Weisz and Rafe Spall, opening next month on Broadway. Mike Nichols joins us from New York, an absolutely incredible, maybe unparalleled career in directing for its span and depth and range. Daniel Craig, Rachel Weisz in this one. Of course, they've done so much. Here's the famous line from Daniel Craig, 2006, Casino Royale.
The name's Bond. James Bond.
Yes, but not this time. And Rachel Weisz, here she is from The Constant Gardener.
If I tell you that girl over there is being murdered, would you believe me?
Tessa, you're tired. You're feverish.
No, I'm not. Now, we haven't got all of the evidence yet, but when we get it, if I bring it to you, will you actually do something for once?
In Pinter's Betrayal, they're married. She's stepping out. Mike Nichols has been there before. In his second movie, 1967, The Graduate, Dustin Hoffman, Benjamin Braddock, new college grad seduced by the older woman, Mrs. Robinson, and Bancroft. Here they are in bed discussing Mrs. Robinson's husband.
There's something we could have a conversation about.
Your husband.
Oh, him.
I mean everything. I don't know anything about how you work this. What do you say to him when you leave the house at night?
Nothing. He's asleep.
Always? Doesn't he wake up when you come home?
We have separate bedrooms.
Mike Nichols, the graduate. Mike Nichols, you've worked in a world, an industry that, you know, the public thinks of as rife with betrayal. Of course, what part of life isn't? But I wonder, after all these years, how your sense of the meaning of betrayal has changed.
Oh, it's very hard to talk about. Betrayal can be betrayal of yourself when it's a betrayal of someone else. I think betrayal is as varied as the relationships that are betrayed. I'm surprised that there are people who can do it. It's a European. Europe is very different from America, and that in Europe, especially affluent Europe, sometimes betrayal is almost a part of the routine of marriage, that it's practically expected. We always carry on a lot about it. But it turns out that how you act about it doesn't have much effect on whether you do it or not. That I think in Europe they are calmer about it, and that women accept it as part of what marriage can be. I don't think Americans are very good at accepting anything that's adverse to how they would like things, viz. Our government at the moment. And I think that it leads to different kinds of works of art. A European betrayal is very much a matter of it's much more matter of fact. It's something that happens. In America, it's always treated as, I mean, in plays and movies, as a fairly serious incursion on the marriage rather than a part of the institution. So it depends on what country you're in, whether it's a tragedy or a comedy.
I guess you're winking at, nodding at our shutdown and all that for a minute there, but I just want to ask, I mean, you and your family came out of Berlin 38 to get out ahead of the Nazis. With that kind of family background, do you span those attitudes? Or, you know, after all these years, are you straight up American?
I think I do span the attitudes. I think there was a lot of adultery in my parents' marriage. And I saw it from a very early age. Yes, and it had an effect. And you don't know how that stuff, what it does to you. You turn out to be who you are and to do what you do. And of course, a lot of it had to do with what happened to you when you were little. But you can't sort it out yourself. And I don't know that, analysis aside, I don't know that there's much point in doing that. It's just you end up who you are.
We've got questions.
I do think it's a very interesting topic because it brings out the extremes in people, and that's what drama likes.
Lots of questions for you online. Here's what Mari says. Does the maestro ever get bored with humanity and want to make a documentary about, say, sea kelp?
I have very little interest in sea kelp, but I think of that as a lack on my part. There are more things in heaven and earth, and I agree. I think it's possible to spend a very fruitful time exploring sea kelp. I prefer people. I mean, not to eat necessarily.
Yes. But ever the urge to throw your hands up on people, on humanity, and say, oh, enough?
Yes, of course. Live in New York, try it.
Yeah.
It's, of course, there are those moments, and they're the moments where you love people. And then you think, well, my family, they're all people. I love them. And we do better than worse with each other. We manage and do more than manage. It can be done. But, you know, people are the most interesting thing to people. And I never get tired of considering people and what we do to each other and how we make each other happy and what's what. But I have to explain that one of the reasons I'm so boring in general is that
we don't agree.
It's that when you're at a certain point in rehearsal, you really can't talk about it because it's something that's on the way, and it's at the moment it's still between us.
Yeah,
nobody's seen it, and it is our private concern. And as you slowly bring it out in front of an audience, of course, it becomes everybody that sees it. It becomes their concern to some extent. But you're necessarily even more boring than usual when you're trying to protect your few little paltry secrets only to see what's going to happen to them, that you can't spread them around and make them topics of discussion because at this point they're still your private concern.
Don't let the magic slip away.
That's pretty much it. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And it sounds nutty, but I think actors specifically are terrified of going into what they're working on because it might go away.
Yeah, yeah, that flame. So many callers for you, Mike Nichols. Taylor in Hampton Roads, Virginia. You're on with Mike Nichols. Hello, Taylor. Are you there?
Oh, doing good. Listen, you're not going to hear me that well. I'll do the best I can. I'm just in a convertible and I'm on the interstate.
That's a good place to call from. I was hoping we'd get some convertible on the interstate call.
Make it quick, Taylor.
This is my lifestyle. I love your work so much. I cannot wait to meet you.
Taylor, you know what? I think this is just too tough. We're going to have to just go with you loving his work in a convertible on the interstate, and you've already given us a little mini play right there. Another thanks, Taylor. Sorry. Enjoy. Wind in your hair. JD in Nashville, Tennessee. You're on with Mike Nichols.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Mike. This is JD Souther.
Hi, JD. Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. And I just want to add to this conversation something that may not have been mentioned. Mike gave me my first job as an actor since high school, probably. And I'd always heard that he was very precise. I'd heard him say that the hardest thing about directing was casting. I'd heard Nicholson say maybe even he was a little mean. The script was Carrie Fisher's book. Meryl Streep was in it.
It was Postcards from the Edge, 1990.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I have to say from day one, from the table read on, I've never felt so much at ease and so much artistic support. He's almost like a musician, the way he just lets things flow. And I just wanted to say hello and thank you and just tell everybody that this guy can become so powerful in your life as an influence that I felt like a sort of an instant best friend. And as I recall, I think I gave you and Diane a copy of the first edition of Thomas Mann to take on your honeymoon.
Diane Sawyer.
You did. Indeed, you did. Yeah. Well, this is so nice of you. You could have done the opposite and put me down, and I'd worry and worry. But this is very kind, J.D. I'm glad. Thank you.
J.D., did he say do it this way? Did he say do it this way, J.D., or how did he pull the performance out of you?
He evokes it. Like I said, although I had heard Nicholson say, I think in jest sort of once, that maybe it helps for him to be a little mean, I thought he more evoked the performance. I didn't really hear him telling anyone what to do, and yet we somehow seemed to do exactly what he wanted us to do. Now that's directing.
That is a good touch.
And you can't tell people what to do because then they do what you told them to do, and that's not very interesting.
Right. That's right. And also, you can't give away your secrets in the process either. It's the same with songwriting. You just don't dare talk about it until it's done.
Well, that's exactly right, because there's the danger that it'll stop.
Right.
Because you don't understand it yourself.
And here we are where it's our job to ask. So we probe and pinch and try and sneak away with whatever we can get. JD, I'm glad to bring you guys back together for a minute. Thanks so much for calling from Nashville.
So much. I'm tickled this play is up on Broadway. I'll see you up there.
I can't wait. Come and say hello.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thanks, J.D. Mark in Salem, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mr. Nichols. I had the luck, or not so luck, 15 years ago to play Jerry in Betrayal. I was too young for it, although I It made me a fan of Harold Pinter, and I was able to see Harold Pinter in one of his shows over in London. He played Hearst in a show called No Man's Land. I think David Mamet directed it. It was just terrific, and I've just gone from fan to fan with respect to Harold Pinter. While on one of those London trips, I also happened to see a show called The Designated Mourner, and now we're getting to it, right? Because I think, Mr. Nichols, you were in that show, and it was our favorite show of that summer tour.
Wallace Shawn's show, yeah.
And I wonder how often you act.
That was the only time I ever acted as a grown-up. I mean, I acted in college. And Elaine and I were in a couple of things, like Playhouse 90 and stuff like that. But I've acted very rarely. I don't like it all that much. I sort of liked doing Designated Mourner, A, because I liked the play so much, and I liked saying what Wallace, my friend Wally Shawn, had written, but also because I got to talk to the audience and look at them while they were looking at me. So sometimes when we'd be eating afterwards and somebody would come over and say, I was riveted, I paid attention to every second, they'd forget that I'd been looking at them too, and I could say to a guy like that, well, actually, you did get distracted by the girl sitting like sort of three people in front of you to your left. And they would get very stunned because they forgot that I was also watching them. And I wasn't a little mean, but I could point out that we were looking at each other, which is a lot of fun when you're addressing the audience.
I'm always blinded by those stage lights. Maybe they've just been set wrong, or I'm too tall or something.
Well, no, after a certain point, you can get to see through them if you're trying. And it kept me interested to know who I was talking to and to see what they were doing and to connect with them. I liked that part.
Yeah, Mike Nichols, looking at the audience, looking at Mike Nichols. What were you hearing in the audience, Mark, as you watched?
We were riveted. It was unbelievably, or maybe not. He was facing the audience the entire time. The show was three actors facing the audience, and they never really got up from this set. It was just a long table that was cast sort of wall to wall, and we all sat there, and I thought, are we just going to be talked to? And that's sort of what happened. But then, of course, we were transported elsewhere. And I have since read, and people should take a look at David Hare's book called Acting Up, about his experience writing and performing a one-man show, in which he says that Mike Nichols was so good in that show that he was sort of offering a clinic to the great actors of London who would come by, surreptitiously slide into the Nationals, you know, side door and make it into the Cotswold, and then watch Mike Nichols invent the script out of the air seemingly night after night, which makes me think that he should act a little bit more.
Okay. Advice given. Advice heard. We'll see. Mark, thank you so much for your call.
Mike, thanks for the kind words.
Yeah, that's very nice. Mike, when do you tend to know what's come out? I mean, I suppose you don't fully know until the audience has seen it and you've felt that interaction. I mean, how many weeks does it take to say, oh, here's what we've got?
Well, it changes all the time. If you do a long run, for instance, like we did The Real Thing for a long, long time on Broadway, and then I went on the road, and then went on the road with various companies and so forth. You see it change. Sometimes you see it as it gets away from New York. It means different things. And if you have actors that get worse and worse because they do more and more, and you have actors who get better and better. I always use Christine Baranski as an example of the perfect way to do a long run, because she gets about 4% better with every performance.
Oh, that's perfect indeed.
Which, it's absolutely steady.
Yeah.
And she gets simpler and simpler and simpler. And finally, she isn't acting at all. She's just living on stage. And she still tells the story, and she still is hilarious if she's playing comedy. Are you singing?
I'm not, but that's our wrap it up slowly music, Mike.
Oh, that's perfect. I'll talk very, very movingly as we move into the sunset.
Yeah.
Arise, in this case.
Well, that's just about where we are. Listen, good luck with the new production with this next week before your previews and
thanks.
With the whole rollout.
Thank you very much. We're having fun.
Wonderful talking with you today. Mike Nichols, great director of stage and screen. His production of Harold Pinter's Betrayal opens in preview October 1st. Don't freak out, Mike. And later in October on Broadway. Mike Nichols, thank you very much for joining us from New York. A little music to go out on here. The Blower's Daughter from his 2004 film Closer. Natalie Portman was there and more. The Blower's Daughter by Damien Rice. Listeners, thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The Blower's Daughter. The pupil in dinner. I can't take my eyes off of you. I can't take my eyes off of you. I can't take my eyes off of you.